What's up, podcast listeners? It's Mushtaq here, one of the contributors from The Real Tramps, your favorite Real Madrid page. I'm here alongside our co-editor of the page, Hassan Karim. Hassan, I'll just let you introduce yourself, and then we'll start talking about our topics for this pod.
Oh, it's me again. Sound like Mini Minter, didn't I? Oh, yeah, it's me. Get on my Twitter, at the Hass Karim, if you want to follow me on there. Let's get to the good stuff. That sounded moderately creepy.
Just a little bit weird, but that's okay. This time there is no Anthony, there is no Christopher. And just before we get into things, we don't always have other people apart from Hassan and I. If you listen to this podcast and you are interested in maybe joining us for part of it or the whole thing, please send us a DM on Twitter at TheRealChampsFS, or if you listen to us through Facebook or however, send us a DM on Facebook message. I don't even understand how Facebook works anymore. I stopped using that when I finished high school. But yeah, message us and we'll definitely get in touch. It'd be interesting to have different views from different people around the world. Anyways, let's jump into things. Real Madrid's last match was, of course, against Huesca, which happened this past weekend. It was a very dicey one. I believe it was on Sunday. We won 1-0. Gareth Bale, a goal at the 8th minute. That was the only goal of the match. Initial thoughts on the game?
It was a terrible performance, but we won, I guess. The 3 points collected, so I'll take that as it stands.
Was it collectively a terrible performance, or was it just the final piece was missing? Because, of course, Real Madrid did get a lot done. They controlled a fair sum of the possession. They had quite a few attacking chances. It's just that little bit that was missing, or is that just how I see it?
No, I could say that's fair enough. I mean, they were sort of putting the ball around the pitch quite nicely, playing the ball around, you know, recycling the ball well. But getting that ball into the final third was just, well, into the positions we wanted it to be in, at least, it was just not happening. It was a mixture, obviously, Huesca being very sort of dogged with the press and causing Madrid all sorts of problems and just not really having anyone that created anything really majorly threatening, to be honest.
Well, let's just run down the stat sheet real quick here. Shots were 11-5 in favor of Huesca. Now, when it comes to shots on target, they were both tied at 4 apiece. Possession was 55-45 in favor of Madrid. Passes, Madrid were up about 80-some-odd, if not more, with 451 to Huesca's 373. Madrid, of course, passed with better accuracy, didn't foul as much, picked up the same amount of yellow card, and had fewer corners, which I found quite striking. So it wasn't a blowout in terms of possession. But what did strike many people is the fact that there was that one goal in the 8th minute. And when Real Madrid does score very early on, especially in the first 20 minutes, against a team that isn't doing so well, considering this team's at the bottom of the table, many were expecting a rout. But that didn't happen at all. Of course, Huesca has the worst goal difference in the league. After that game, they have 30 goals against and only 12-4.
Yeah, you feel a bit bad for them because they haven't performed awfully bad. I mean, I've watched a few games of theirs. Even the one against Barcelona as well, they obviously lost 8-2, but they started that game. I'm pretty sure they went 2-0 up at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they got blown out 8-2. So I think their biggest problem is obviously at the back. It's quite clear it's at the back. I mean, they press well. They get good combinations going from midfield into the final third. They gave us numerous problems going forward with their quick sort of interchanges and just rocketing down the pitch. So they're not, you know, awfully bad. But again, they gave Madrid, you know, their money's worth in that game. It's not. I don't think it's something they should be ashamed of. The performance wasn't bad. They were just unlucky not to put the ball in there, to be honest. Courtois was on his game. And they did miss a couple of good sitters as well. So again, just it's a matter of luck, really, which they've just not really had the rub of the green.
Speaking of Courtois, he got the start again in that Champions League match, rather, in that La Liga fixture. Is it warranted for him to still be getting the start, or should Keylor Navas be getting some as well now?
I think they should rotate it more fairly than they have been, but Courtois not conceded in 303 minutes now. So I think it'd be a bit unfair just to pull him from the plug and just be like, yeah, we're rotating because of this, that, and the other. I mean, if he's got form, you ideally want him to keep it there because, you know, obviously his confidence when we first came in wasn't particularly great. He was still quite shaky and didn't seem to be able to stop a shot that came at him, whereas now he's, you know, he's making clutch saves against Valencia. He was very important. Against West, we probably did essentially to some degree keep the game in our favour. So I think to pull him from the league games would be unfair. Maybe give Navas the Champions League games. I don't know. I mean, it seems like a nail down the East starting in the cup, so I'm not sure what the situation is exactly. But yeah, maybe you could just rotate the cups and stuff for him. But I think in the league, it's best to keep Courtois in there, seeing as he'll remain consistent.
Now, there's an interesting lineup, of course, when you look at the starting 11 in two positions to look at most with a magnifying glass, if you will. In the right back position, you have Odriozola playing in lieu of Marcelo, who is injured. And rather than having Casemiro there as a holding midfielder, we had Marcos Llorente. And because Toni Kroos was also unavailable, we had Dani Ceballos. How would you rate those three coming into a game like this? Of course, it's not the stiffest of competitions, but it's fair to say each one of them has grown in their own right.
Yeah, Odriozola is just, I said earlier, and as soon as he put the ball in for Bale, his crossing ability is ludicrous at times. He's got solid sort of, attacking IQ in terms of when to go forward, when not to go forward. He's decent going backwards as well. I mean, he had a bit of a rough time in this game against, the winger that was attacking his side of the field, but he was fine through most of the game, putting a good few tackles. Obviously, created the assist with a really, really good cross. He put numerous dangerous balls into the box and in and around the area. So to be honest, you can't knock his performance. Llorente, did another solid job. I think Casemiro is going to sweat to get his position back when he does come return from injury. And Ceballos has just been consistent. I don't think he's given anything to really rave about just yet. But he's doing enough, to warrant the starts that he's getting. That's for sure.
Now, just looking at everything as a whole, of course, after that game, Real Madrid are sitting a little prettier than they were earlier on in the season. I believe our worst spot at one point was in ninth place. Currently, we sit in fourth place at 26 points. What do you make of the change that's happened so far? Is it just because we haven't played teams with the stiffest competition? Or has this team really picked up and improved under Solari?
So to be honest, there's been performances under Solari where we've won the game and not really particularly played great. The Roma game comes to mind. We weren't particularly fantastic in that game, rode our luck a little bit in that game. Obviously, still got the win, so I think it's a case of he's just got the sort of rub of the green in terms of the fact that the team is scoring now. And I don't think we faced the stiffest of competition yet, to be honest. Valencia is probably the toughest opponents we face, and even they're sort of out of sorts right now. So it'll be really, I think January is when the schedule really picks up with tougher sides. So it'll be interesting to see how he does then when the schedule's picked up and the opponents are inevitably tougher.
Now, we've had 8 games under Solari, seven of them. Seven? I believe it's seven. Or 9 games. No, I'm mistaken.
Yeah, it's 9 games with 7 wins, I think.
7 wins, and seven of which are clean sheets. Has the defense improved? Or has the style of play just been such that Madrid are holding the ball more and not coughing it up as much?
I think Llorente has been a huge, huge factor in that, in the few games that he's played. Obviously, Casemiro is in himself is a good player, but Llorente's coming and he snuffs out everything, and he's so quick to get to things. I think the defense has sort of sharpened up a little bit, and I think Courtois obviously now finding his confidence in between the sticks has also helped massively, contributing with big saves and stuff like that. So I think just collectively as a unit between Llorente to Courtois, they've definitely tightened up at the back, which is, helping the team not ship any goals. It's good to see, really. Not something we're typically accustomed to.
Would it be ludicrous to say that Casemiro now has some competition for his position in the starting 11? Or is it a case of as soon as he's fit and he's ready to go, he gets the number one spot back and Llorente is now relegated to the bench again?
I hope he's not just relegated to the bench. I think that'd be unfair. He's more than warranted his space in there. It's like I've said previously, I think Llorente is a far superior at distributing the ball. And I think he's just a little bit better going forward. He's a bit more graceful in his dribble and stuff like that. Yeah, Casemiro's got the unpredictable sort of long-range shot, which we've seen him do numerous times. But I think in terms of offering, you know, the ball going forward, distributing it, whether it's distributing it or dribbling it. I feel that Llorente is just a little bit more press resistant as well. So I don't know. I'd hope he doesn't just march back into his spot, and I'd like to imagine that that is competition. I think it is. I don't think many people would disagree with that, really.
Do you see any plausibility in Solari doing somewhat of a split competitions kind of situation where Casemiro will get the bigger La Liga and all Champions League matches, wherein then you'd have Llorente getting the smaller fixtures in La Liga, say the bottom half of the table, as well as all the Copa del Rey? Or does it just end up being a game time decision and who's in better form?
It could be a combination of two, really. It depends whether Solari's obviously got the cojones to drop people because they're not performing, which to me hasn't quite shown just yet. But I think he seems to have the mindset of rotation because he's implemented a lot of the youth players into the lineup and stuff like that in recent games. So I think he will fairly rotate it as and when needs.
In the last few games we've played, Udinese Maia, we've played Valencia, we've played Roma, we've played Eibar, which was our one loss. In those few games, we've seen quite an array of starting 11s. We've seen players like Fedi, we've seen Javi Sanchez, we've seen a bit of Vinicius, or like we said, we've seen Dani Ceballos, and now we've seen a heck lot more of Marcos Llorente as well. Do you think this can be somewhat reminiscent of Zidane's season? I think it was in 2016 when we had that A-team versus B-team kind of thing. Or will it be more of a hybrid? And do you see the possibility of all these players still getting those minutes, even as we dive deeper into the season? Or is this just him fiddling with the puzzle and seeing what works where?
I think it's a bit of a hybrid, really. I don't think they've quite got the depth that we had in the 16-17 season. Not quite to the same level anyway. I think it's more a case of Solari's kind of showcasing the talents of tomorrow, obviously with Valverde, Ceballos, Reguilón, Javi Sanchez, and all those cats. He's kind of showing us obviously that the talents are there. There's no real need to sort of go out shopping for, you know, big name talents, and your player's perfectly capable back home already. So I think it'll be a case of he'll just again rotate the lineup as and when he needs to, and see what works when, as opposed to having an AP and a team and a B team.
A quick yes or no question. Now that Solari's gone 7-for-9 and he's done quite well, does he stay come January, or do you think Madrid is low-key just shopping behind the scenes?
I don't think they'll be shopping behind the scenes. I can't see them changing manager for a third time this season. That would be pretty impressive.
Going back to form and seeing how Solari has changed so many, you know, fixtures, one person that has been a constant and also a constant bother to many fans has been Gareth Bale. There hasn't been a game this season where he's played anything shy of 45 minutes. He's played a considerable amount. In his first three La Liga games that he played, and Real Madrid's first three La Liga games, he had 3 goals. And I believe he went on for 10 goals, or rather 10 games without a single goal, finally breaking that against Huesca this evening. Against Huesca this weekend. My mind is clearly somewhere else. And do you think that means that Gareth Bale's turning over the page, or is this just another splash in the pan?
Well, I think Chris would be happy to point this out. I said in the group chat just before the game when the lineup came out, and excuse my French here, but I said, why the f*** is Gareth Bale still in the lineup? To which Chris replied quickly saying that he's still the best winger in our lineup, and if he's not going to break the duck from the bench, which it's fair comment, because obviously he went on to prove me wrong within 8 minutes of the game. But I've always said the biggest problem with Bale so far this season has been purely lack of consistency. He'll score in, say, you know, the Roma game, and then do nothing in the next one, or the next three or four, whatever. So for me now, it would be a case of, can he consistently keep providing something going forward? So we'll see what he does, you know, obviously on Wednesday against CSKA, and then on the weekend against Rayo as well. If he can, you know, continue to provide the goods, then I've got no issues with him being in the lineup, as well, nobody else, I'd imagine. But when he's in the games, essentially sort of fading in and out, showing glimpses here and there, but not really doing much on a larger scale, you'd sort of sit and think maybe we should have given a chance to somebody else, you know. I don't see why he should command the spot just because obviously, you know, he's the big name in the squad in that regard.
Well, moving from one quote-unquote Galactico to a former Galactico, and I'm sure you all know who we're talking about, Cristiano Ronaldo is always in the spotlight. But today and in the past couple of hours, he's been in the spotlight for something very, very different. He did an interview with with the news outlet where he basically said, we can drop a couple of links on our Twitter where you can find the pieces, essentially just saying that Real Madrid wasn't much like a family and it was more strictly business kind of relationships. But there at Juventus, he feels that everyone is so well connected. His comments, of course, sparked plenty of outrage against Madrid fans, wondering why would he say that. And one of our writers, Ali, actually wrote a really interesting article, just kind of touching on whether Cristiano Ronaldo has forgotten his Real Madrid past faster than many would have expected. And the expectation comes from the fact that he's always had that affinity and attachment for Manchester United. Despite spending most of his career here with us at Real Madrid, why is it that he's moved on so quickly? And what sparked those comments that seem to have a little bit of heat in the undertone?
There's a lot of combinations to what's going on, really. I think that obviously his really sort of detailed breakdown with Florentino Perez hasn't helped. I think the treatment that he got going out of the club bothered him. I wouldn't say even just necessarily when he was going out of the club, just over the last few years, really. In terms of things he's promised, and you know, the club not backing him when he had his tax fraud case, throughout those sort of things, really. I think those obviously have pushed him to kind of throw shade, and obviously, I know that obviously the context of the comments made by some players is something worth noting. But he made it feel sour towards the likes of Isco and Ramos for their comments and what they've said. So I think it's a combination of things really as to why he's throwing so much sort of shade so quickly.
Well, we don't like to focus too much on that, so we'll push that aside for now. Just an interesting little tidbit there. But from one Ballon d'Or winner to the newest Ballon d'Or winner, breaking one of the craziest runs in what must be any kind of sports history when it comes to individual awards. The Ballon d'Or, of course, is the biggest, the most illustrious, the most highly coveted award for footballers around the world. Now, to win that award is essentially saying you were the best player in the previous season, not just for club, but also for country, if that is applicable. You've clearly outshone everybody else on your team and everyone else in the world. For the first time in 10 years, neither Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo has won that award. And I believe in the first time in 14 years, Messi was kept out of the top three. We won't get into that, but I will personally say I don't think that was warranted at all. He definitely should be in the top three. Nonetheless, Modric, of course, got a heap of flack for winning that award. And many pointing out, if he won it, why did Arjen Robben never win it? Why did Frank Ribery never win it? Why did Xavi nor Iniesta win it? Do you think he did deserve to win it?
To be honest, I know this is opening a can of worms. No, I don't think so, but I'm not majorly annoyed or sad by the fact that he won it. I think if anyone but Ronaldo was going to win it, I would rather have Modric won it. If it wasn't Modric, then maybe Varane, but I'm happy that a Madrid player won it at least outside of Ronaldo, so I'm not going to complain too much.
Well, there you have it. That was your answer on the Ballon d'Or. That was very politically sound. It's almost like you practiced the answer for that one. But just looking at more individual awards that are coming up, I believe Real Madrid was eight. Is it eight or nine Real Madrid players have been listed for the UEFA Team of
Off
the
my
Year?
head, I think it's eight.
I think so too. Basically, what I'm trying to tell you is Real Madrid is absolutely smashing it. Some cool little tidbits. Odriozola is one of the key assist men for Real Madrid this season. Sergio Ramos has actually passed Michel for the most appearances. Well, not most. For he's now in sixth place in terms of sixth most appearances in La Liga with Real Madrid. He got to 405 in that match against Valencia, which is what took him over Michel, and now he's at 406. He's also quite up there, I think, with five. Let me check.
585.
585, yes, you're right. 585. He was in the starting 11 for the 585th time against Huesca this past weekend. quite crazy. 19 titles in 14 years. He's scored four, or he's won four European Cups, three Club World Cups, three European Super Cups, four La Liga titles, two Copas, and three Spanish Super Cups. And, of course, don't forget, that does include a three-peat in 4 and 5 years. So,
Lovren who?
That was actually golden. It's funny to hear people still talk smack about this guy, despite everything that he's done. But yeah, just ahead of him now are Hierro and Gento, who are tied at 601, Santillana at 645, Sanchez at 710, Casillas at 725, and Raul, of course, leading them all at 741. So, still some time. I'm sure Ramos will be here for a couple more seasons. Could he reach Raul? I don't know. Could be possible. Who knows?
I think 32, I think, now.
Yeah, I think he is 32. Let's see how old the King of Spain is. In my eyes, Sergio Ramos is the King of Spain. Like, I don't adhere to the actual monarchy. He is the king. Yes, he's 32, born in 86.
So, yeah, he's got at least a few more years in him. So, he could, I don't know if you'll overtake Raul's record, but you'd be pretty close, I think.
It's possible. But anyway, there you guys have it. We've covered our last game. We've talked about Solari and what we think of him. I think he's doing well. I think he's been doing wonderfully. He's definitely added spark back into this team. Just some injury updates. Toni Kroos is back in training, so may expect to see him on the weekend fixture, not the midweek against CSK Moscow. Of course, we've done our little TMZ tidbit over there discussing Cristiano Ronaldo's comment. And just a side note, he also did talk about that whole idea about Marcelo coming to Juventus. He didn't say whether it would or wouldn't happen, but he gave the answer that many presidents and many teams and players do, saying players of good quality are welcome at this club, and Marcelo is one of those players. But that is the same shebang we hear all the time. Nonetheless, thank you guys so much for listening. Hassan and I are going to do our level best to get another podcast out after the CSK Moscow match, which, of course, is this midweek fixture. It is the last match of the group stage. Real Madrid has secured the bag in terms of topping the group, but we still want to go through all the little tidbits of when the draw's happening and what to expect. So if you're interested in that, please do stay tuned. I totally forgot. Hassan, we have some questions. We have to answer them first.
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't slide out with those. You might upset some people.
I might upset some people. Hassan has a question, so I'll let him read them, and then we'll both take a crack at it.
So we've got one here that's pretty much the same question. So from at Real Ricky Tama and also at Alfie7177. Winter transfers. This guy's Alfie here specifically detailed to no Ibrahimovic and no to Sterling. Need a defender as soon as possible. Ricky said, will they bring some players or try to use players from the academy as they perform really well in every minute they get? I think Bale and Benzema really need to back up as their consistency is going up and down so far. Winter transfers, then, what do you think, Mushtaq?
I don't think winter transfers are going to happen, to be honest. I don't think there's going to be any reinforcements. No, will there be any big names coming through that door? I think there's just way too much happening right now. I think we've discussed this in a previous podcast as well. We have a few players over 30. And once you hit that 30-year mark, you know what that means with Florentino Perez. So I think if anything in the back of his head, he's probably already scheming. Maybe one or two people will leave Real Madrid this season. Kind of free up some cap space, as we say here in North America. In Europe, is just referred to the salary, I guess. But yeah, I don't see that happening. And in terms of defense, I honestly, have you been watching the last four games of Real Madrid? Our Castillo players have been doing amazing and really stepping up. And so I don't see why you would need to bring them in. Of course, you have a strong, strong back four. And then you have, in my opinion, one of the best backup defenders because of how versatile he is in every position in the back line is Nacho Fernandez. So January transfers, don't see it happening. I think Real Madrid is going to be focused on putting their money in other places, like that wonderful stadium we should be getting. And if you're more intrigued by that, we'll try and get Chris for a podcast just on that stadium. But he did write a great article that just went up today on that, so check it out.
Yeah, no, I think you've pretty much nailed it on the head. The only transfer I can see maybe coming in this winter would be Ezequiel Palacios. from River Plate. Other than that, don't think there's anyone else that you can feasibly get anyway, to be honest.
It doesn't make sense to.
No, not really. Defenders wise, I just don't think it's necessary. I think everyone's fine right now. And I think players like Javi Sanchez, Reguilon, people and Odriozola will prove their worth. So that basically that's just a note to Hermoso coming back, stay where you are, thank you very much. And forwards, there's no one we can realistically get anyway. Icardi's not going to leave into mid season, especially if they make the Champions League knockouts, which is still feasible. Harry Kane signed to a new long-term deal. Who else is there? I can't think of anybody else realistically we've been linked to.
I mean, Ibrahimovic, Eden Hazard, the likes of those people, but of course, it's just
Hazard's not going to leave mid-season. That's a no-go.
it's
Ibrahimovic
all
has
very
decided to
unrealistic.
go out of America now because his family's settled, so I don't think that's going to happen. Raheem Sterling, I didn't think it was going to happen anyway, but to be fair, I wouldn't be massively opposed to that. I think he's a great player. There's literally nobody feasible. The only player I could say we could possibly tempt and rock the boat for maybe Anthony Martial, but.
I wouldn't even want him. In my eyes, every third of this team is so jam-packed with so much talent.
Yeah, to be honest, it's kind of hard to think. Even if we do get someone, where'd you slot them in? Unless you sell somebody in January,
I think the thing is
going to be
it, like I
happening.
said, if you get somebody, it's going to be more of a headache trying to figure out a new combination of what works well as opposed to just working with what we have. We're already halfway through the season. We're into our second manager now, who's just about going to play his 10th match, or rather, he's going to lead his team into their 10th match in this week, his midweek fixture in the Champions League. I think just it's essentially throwing a spanner in the works.
Yeah,
There's
we can't afford to
no
fidget
reason for
around with the setup anymore, really, can we? We've already done it too much this season. So yeah, I think in terms of winter transfers, and Mushtaq also agrees, nothing's really going to happen. And the other question we have, which is from Sajid Riaz, that's at Saj07. What the hell is wrong with Solari and is messing around with Isco? We saw a game where we were sublime with him at the Ford just 3 days before the absolute horror show against Huesca. Isco is our most dangerous creator of chances in the final third, and we need him back. I do agree with that. I think he showed against Melia that he's got, the ability to control a game for literally all the way through from 1 to 90. He was pretty solid in that game, connecting with this Vinicius and Asensio multiple times. He set Mariano running numerous times, created two goals for himself, both of which were very, very good goals. Completely dictated the tempo of the game. So yeah, I think we need to see more of him for sure. I know Mushtaq's definitely gonna go absolutely ape shit with this one, so I'll pass it over to him.
I actually think you're not going to expect the answer I'm going to give. If the rumors are true that Isco was disrespecting Solari, or there was a bit of a disagreement there, I think it is on the onus of Isco to fix that because he is a player, and at the end of the day, he should be falling in line with what the upper management's saying. It's not like they're asking for anything ridiculous. To the person who asked that question, I see what you're saying about that performance against Maia. But then you also have to remember that they play in Segunda Division B.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
You should be able to play Isco, and Isco should be able to make an impact on that game. And if he isn't able to make an impact on a game against a team who's in Division B of the Segunda, I think you have bigger problems.
Serious issues.
So while he did do well, he did score, I think it was two goals, you said, right? Both
Yes, girls.
like you said, were very nice. Like he adds a lot of charisma and character to this team, but if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, for sure.
Real Madrid's
I
been in a
concur.
very peculiar position in the last few weeks, and Solari's been able to get wins and get 3 points, and that's what everyone wants. I think it would be a damned if you do, damned if you don't. If Isco did play and we did end up losing those games, people would blame it all on him. We've seen it many times in the past few seasons. As soon as something goes to shit, it's always Isco's fault. He hogs the ball too much. He waits too long to release it. He makes too many passes. He likes to dribble too much. Irrespective of what he does, I don't think it would have worked. I think the best thing to do right now is just to respect and just have faith in Solari's decisions. Like I said, we've gone 7 for 9. We've kept plenty of clean sheets. It's working. I'm sure Solari wants to use Isco, and he will find the right moment to do so as the season progresses. There's no way that Isco doesn't get playing time. And for the transfer rumors, I think they're all absurd. There's no way he's leaving. Isco is Spanish. He's like the little baby boy of this team. There's no way Real Madrid will let go of him.
Yeah, no, I'd be amazed if they did let go of him, to be honest. I mean, who they're linked into, I think it's Bayern and Man City.
Yeah.
So the only feasible one I could see there is Man City, and even that's still a long shot. I can't see him going to Bayern Munich. What for?
But why would he go to Man City? They already have Riyad Mahrez, who's somewhat similar in playing style to him.
Exactly.
Like, it's going to end up being like a Samir Nasri kind of situation where he's, you know, kind of important for a season or two, and then he kind of just disappears. And where is Nasri now? I don't even know.
I think he's in Turkey, last I heard.
You think? You don't even know either. That just goes to show you why I don't think Isco's going to leave. He likes it here too much at Real Madrid. Spain is his home. What other team is he going to play for?
Yeah, Spain. I can't realistically see him leaving, to be honest. I really, really can't see him leaving. I don't see why he would. He's, like you said, he's got a strong affinity with the club. He's got good relations with his teammates, obviously, particularly with Asensio. So I don't see why he's going to up and bounce because of an alleged beef with Solari, which I don't think is true anyways.
Well, speaking of, you know, being close with other players, of course, he's really close with the captain, Sergio Ramos. So, again, another reason why it's very unlikely that this kid is going to be pushed out of the team. Anyway, I think we've answered the questions sufficiently. Please shoot us more. I'm not going to do the whole outro again. I'm sure you guys got the gist of it. We're going to do another podcast this week. We hope you stay tuned. Hope you enjoy the game. Hassan and I will probably be doing another Periscope or maybe a Facebook Live during the game this week. It's on Wednesday. I think it's on Wednesday.
Yeah, the Champions League game is on Wednesday.
It's on Wednesday, ladies and gents. Anyways, hope you enjoy the rest of your night or day or wherever you may be listening. Send us a tweet. We'd like to know where our listeners are from. As always, a la Madrid.